I'm doing well, thanks. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys, too.
Yeah, appreciate that. Before we get into what happened yesterday at Chase Center, I know there was a little bit of an injury update earlier today. For tomorrow's game, both Stephen Curry and Jonathan Kuminga questionable. We know JK's been dealing with that illness that kept him out the last couple of games, and Stephen Curry dealing with patella soreness in both of his knees, questionable for tomorrow. What can you tell us about both of those guys' status for the game tomorrow?
Well, JK practiced today and looked good, so I'm hopeful that he'll play tomorrow. Steph and Draymond both sat out practice just with aches and pains, and Steph with the knee stuff. So we'll just keep him as questionable, and we'll see how he's doing tomorrow.
Steve, I'm just wondering, maybe this is sort of a philosophical question, but when you're facing a run and a team goes on a run like the Nets had in the third quarter going into the fourth, how do you sort of decide whether it's a time to, you know, call a timeout immediately or let it ride and see if you can stop it? Is that in the flow of the game, or how do you sort of assess that?
Yeah, I mean, every game is a little different, and so you just try to get a feel for what's happening. Are we getting good shots? Are we having good possessions? Is there a schematic change that we want to make? Is there a personnel change we want to make? So, a little bit of all of that, and you make the decision game to game. I think, you know, the one thing I would change looking back on the game, and there's always something when you lose, you're always looking at everything, but I probably should have taken a timeout late third. I had one that I was going to lose anyway at the end of the quarter, and I think I probably should have taken one, you know, with less than a minute left, just to try to help us get through the quarter in a good way, because it's two games in a row now where the end of that third quarter has really hurt us and hurt our momentum. So I probably could have done a better job of helping our team through that stretch.
Coach, Lo Neal here, man. Love watching you play. You and Paxson back in the day, sitting up hitting those threes with you and Jordan. I mean, it was absolutely legendary, man. I was, you know, played 17 years in the other ball, football, but it was an honor, man. So appreciate what you did, Coach.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. When you're playing a game and you're coaching a game and you're into those moments, how do you know if a team's better than you, or if it's talent, or is it coaching? How do you put that together and say, okay, this team is better, or, you know, they just went on a run? How do you put that together collectively to know what you have?
I think every game is different, and you know, we go into every game with a game plan, you know, how we're going to beat this team. You know, who's best suited on our team to match up with certain guys, that sort of thing. And then, you know, it's amazing how fragile everything is. Just there's such a small margin of error in these games, and a small margin of difference. Even when you play a team like the Nets that's hurt by injuries like they were last night, you know, they made 23s, so they're capable. And every team is capable. You know, these guys wouldn't be in the NBA if they weren't great players. And the way the game is played today, with the three-point line, with the pace, it just feels like big leads are more vulnerable than ever. And so it's up to us as coaches to, you know, to constantly assess where the game is, what's happening, and try to adjust from there.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. And coach, I was just going to ask you about that. Obviously, it's a good thing to build big leads, and you've had your fair share of them so far this year. I think what happened in Houston, you lead by 30, you go to overtime, you led by 30 in OKC. That game came down to the wire just about. And then, of course, what's happened the last two games where you had double-digit leads in the third quarters and you lose those games. When you go back and look at what happened in those moments, is there any common thread? And how do you use what has happened specifically in those four games to maybe, coach the guys up and make sure that doesn't happen in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think the three-point shooting and the pace, as I mentioned, means that in the old days, a 15-point lead felt really safe, and it no longer does. But with that said, you have to look at all these games and examine the tape, and what the tape showed last night was very, very poor execution at both ends. And honestly, I'm not shocked. You know, we had a tough trip last week. You know, 3 games in 4 nights. Our guys were really tired, I felt, and we hadn't practiced in about a week. This is the modern NBA; you don't practice much, and I felt like we had major slippage at both ends. And it's been a common theme, I would say, when we've given up leads. It's mainly execution at both ends, just missing rotations on defense, not getting into our offense quickly enough or with enough force and pace. And like I said, very small margin for error at this level. And as soon as you let your foot off the gas a little bit, teams can storm back quickly, and I think that's been the case for us. So we'll try to keep working on that and get that cleaned up.
Steve, obviously, you know, when a game ends the way it does, rotations and the ending rotation becomes an easy point for people online to criticize. What did you like about the final group you had there out there on the floor, and why wasn't Moses Moody part of that group?
Well, I was looking for the best combination of defense and playmaking. I felt like we were really struggling offensively. So Brandon Podziemski gives us the most playmaking amongst the group that I'm deciding on. And then Gary Payton gives us the best defender. So Dennis Schroeder was dominating the game. So I wanted Gary on Schroeder. And then I felt like with Gary on the floor, Gary's kind of plays like a big. He's like a 6'3" power forward. So, you know, he's not a playmaker. He's a finisher. So I felt like we need the playmaking of Brandon. And it's interesting. So far with this team, I've closed with lots of different combinations. And part of that is good. We've got a lot of guys who are capable of closing. And part of it is bad in that I'm not really sure from one night to the next, you know, who to go to, frankly. And so that's with a deep team that hasn't really sort of divided itself and separated itself, and you don't know quite what your rotation is going to look like, you have to make decisions from one night to the next. And they didn't work out last night, and that's, you know, that's part of it. You know, every night's going to be a little different at this point.
Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Coach, obviously you've been dealing now without D'Anthony Melton for a bit of time, and unfortunately now out for the season as he opts to undergo ACL surgery. I think as a result, you've had to rely on Brandon Podziemski a little bit more, and it's no secret that he has struggled shooting the ball. What did you see from Podziemski last night? It felt like he was a little bit more involved in everything happening on the court. You mentioned you wanted him out there for his playmaking ability, but number one, how hard is it to make up for the loss of Melton? And I know Podziemski has always been important, but specifically without Melton, how important is it to get him involved consistently every night without D'Anthony Melton?
Yeah, Melt's loss was huge for us. He was the ideal fit next to Steph, you know, two-way player, one of our best on-ball defenders, and then a guy who could create on offense and allow Steph to get off the ball. So that was an enormous loss. And then, you know, the Brandon piece, he had a great rookie year for us last year. We love so much about what he can do, just his feel for the game, his playmaking, his reads on cuts, that sort of thing. It's one of the reasons I trust him so much, because he makes the game make sense. So I saw a lot of that last night. Yes, he's been struggling with the shot, but he does a lot of other things well. And, you know, the thing I've been telling Brandon is just to play. If he goes out and competes and does what he does, the shot will go. I mean, he puts in a ton of work, probably too much, actually. And he'll eventually relax and those shots will start to go. But he's a very important player for us and a really, really good young player. We're excited about him. But these are, you know, common stretches for young players like Brandon to go through. So he'll get through it.
coaching football, you know, end of the game, you want to run out the clock and try to, you know, pop a big play. How do you be conservative but still put your foot on the throttle and you know, and make sure you win the game when you have a lead? What are some of the things, that the thought process of that for guys not to take their foot off the gas, but conservative to win the game when you're to preserving leads?
Yeah, I mean, it's always an interesting balance with us. You know, we've thrived on some chaos over the years. The way Steph Curry plays, he's going to take some difficult shots. He's going to make some difficult passes. But part of the challenge this year is to get Steph and Draymond to throttle back a little bit with some of the risk taking, because this team is not as capable as our teams from 5-6 years ago of withstanding, you know, turnovers and mistakes. But at the same time, we want to be aggressive. And to me, that comes with execution. I'm sure it's the same way in football. You know, if the receivers don't run their routes with pace, if blockers don't attack the line, I mean, if everybody's not playing with pace and energy, then it's really hard to generate a good shot. And that's what we're really focused on this year. And for the most part, we've been good. We're top 10 in both offense and defense. Obviously 12-5 is a great record to have, but these last two games have definitely exposed us a little bit in terms of, you know, that execution and what you're talking about, you know, closing games down the stretch. So it's a long haul, long season, and we're trying to get better with everything. And I'm confident we're going to improve.
Steve, on a positive note, it feels like we're starting to see the sort of Andrew Wiggins that we had hoped to expect that he'd be. I mean, what have you seen from him? It seems like he's being more aggressive, more proactive, looking a bit like what you'd want him to look like.
Yeah, Wiggs has been fantastic, attacking the rim, you know, looking for his shot, playing great defense. This is the guy who helped us win a championship 2 years ago, so it's wonderful to see him in a really good place, mentally, physically, playing at a high level and enjoying himself. You know, this is the Wiggs we all know and love, and I'm really happy for him that he's playing so well.
Coach, obviously the last two games, you've been without Jonathan Kuminga. I know we've already talked. He's questionable for tomorrow. You're hopeful that he can play as he recovers from that illness that he's been battling. To me, and tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like you really missed him the last couple of games, because when you get in those funks, when opponents are going on runs and they're pressuring your ball handlers and maybe they're overplaying a little bit along the perimeter, you need someone who can, you know, cut back door, slash to the hoop, get to the rim, maybe draw a foul, get to the free throw line, just to allow everyone to take a deep breath and to calm down a little bit. And obviously Kuminga is one of the guys on your roster that can do that. So how unfortunate has it been that the two games that Kuminga's had to miss due to illness are games that turn out like this? Because it felt like to me he could have been maybe a way for you guys to get out of those funks in the fourth quarters, the last two games you played.
I totally agree. I think we watched it in New Orleans, actually, because you know, we were kind of struggling late third quarter in that game, and Jonathan got downhill 5-6 times late in that quarter and generated baskets and kind of you know, rectified the game and got us our momentum back. And that's is hugely important for us to rely on JK's ability to do that. And you remember the Houston game, the one we mentioned earlier that went overtime when we lost that 30-point lead. He took over overtime, you know, playing against a super athletic team, because he's really our best athlete, going to the rim and converting, getting us an easy basket now and then. And so we really missed his ability, especially at a time where, you know, we're on a tough trip, three games in 4 nights, travel problems, all kinds of stuff. That's where you really need your youth and your energy and the young guys to come step up and contribute. And so his illness was definitely a big loss for us the last couple games.
Steve, obviously a pressing question here with Thanksgiving coming up. What is your favorite Thanksgiving dish, and do you get involved in the kitchen? What is your routine on Thanksgiving?
I'm lucky that my wife is an excellent cook. I do like to cook. I cook frequently, but not on Thanksgiving. I'm kind of busy. I got stuff going on, so I think my favorite dish, sweet potatoes for sure, with the marshmallow on top. I can't enough for that. That's good stuff.
Hey, Coach, I'm going to go back to basketball here really quick for just a second. I'm going to ruin the mood. I know we just had a little bit of fun with Thanksgiving. But Buddy Hield, you're now a month into the regular season having coached this guy for the first time, and obviously he got off to such an amazing start shooting the basketball. I mean, breaking records for most made threes in his first X amount of games with a new team. He's still obviously been effective, maybe hasn't been shooting the ball quite as well, but something I've noticed about Buddy Hield, even when the shot isn't falling, I mean, he's running the floor relentlessly. There was an awesome moment in the New Orleans game on the road where he sprinted down the floor. The passing lane wasn't there. Cut baseline to the opposite corner. It wasn't there. Then he ran back to where he came from, and Moses Moody made a nice pass, and in he had hit a nice reverse layup. Buddy Hield, we think of him, I think, as just this three-point shooter, but can you talk about everything else he brings to your team more so than just shooting, and why maybe even when his shot is slumping, he's still a valuable player to you?
Yeah, Buddy's fantastic. Number one, he brings a great joy to the building every single day. He loves the game. He loves his teammates. He loves being part of a team. So it's the gym is just a happier place when Buddy is around. So that's a big deal. But of course, his shooting, his sprinting the floor. You mentioned that play where he sprinted the floor and then the baseline. He never stops moving. And the way he sprints the floor in transition, even when he doesn't get the shot, he frequently opens up somebody else for a shot because the defense has to honor him. So, but he's really been great. I know his shot hasn't gone as often, this last week or so, but that's all part of being a shooter. I'm not worried about that at all. I want him to keep firing away and keep doing what he does because he's had a huge impact on our team.
Hey, Coach, you brought up Dennis Schroeder earlier. I mean, he was incredible last night. It feels like every time you guys play Dennis Schroeder, whichever team he's been on, I know he's kind of bounced around a lot, feels like he gives you guys trouble. Are you guys tired of playing against Dennis Schroeder?
Well, not only that, he beat us in the World Cup when I was coaching Team USA 2 summers ago in the Philippines, dominating that game. He's a hell of a player. He really is. I have great respect for him, his two-way ability. I thought his defense on Steph last night was important in their win. And he just took over down the stretch, hit all the big shots. And he's a gamer. He is. You're right. It seems like he's got it out for us for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, at least he's in the Eastern Conference, so you only got to play him one more time this year. At least there's that.
That's right.
That's all we got for you today, Steve. We appreciate your time as always. Hope you have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up with you next week. Best of luck tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, guys, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody listening out there.
All right, there's Coach Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors. Friendly as always, Steve.
Yeah, he's a great guy. It's interesting that you, when you hear Coach talk and you just talk about sports in general, the one consistent thing is effort. You know, you talked about Buddy Hield being able to sprint down, talking about, hey, how do you close? Guys still got to play with a sense of urgency. Even when you have a lead, just the lack of detail, even when you have a lead, how do you finish? How do you close? Still got to run a sharp route. You still got to hit the hole hard. You still got to do those things in every sport. And that's what he's talking about with basketball. He's just like, look, yeah, you got to be conservative. He's telling, hey, look, tell Draymond, tell Steph, you know, we don't have the talent, the surrounding cast that we used to have. So you have to slow it down, or you can't make those passes that are going to put us in harm's way. So we got to protect the lead. So it's just interesting to how it all, you know, comes together in all sports. And to be good, you have to do those little things to win.
No question. I think what's really interesting, Kerr said a few things that I think we can get back to, but he said a few things. One, that he's not really sure, you know, from one night to the next, who to go to, you know, with the closing lineup. And as much as, you know, everyone online likes to get upset and call for Steve's head if the result doesn't go the right way, it is like you have this massive group of guys where it's not necessarily always clear, especially when you don't have Kuminga. You just lost D'Anthony Melton. And yeah, you could go a number of ways, but he also took the fact that he probably should have taken a timeout late in the third. That's ownership and doesn't solve the loss, but it's at least your coach saying, all right, yeah, I could have done better in that situation, no question about it.
Yeah, and to the point of don't know who to close with on any given night. I mean, I guess it makes sense when you have so many choices. It's also dependent on what the opponent is doing and what the situation calls for, but it's part of why I think a lot of people think, and I think it also was a possibility last year, it ultimately ended up not happening, why a lot of people feel like there is a trade coming at some point where maybe you ship off two, maybe you ship off three, you get one or two players back just to cut down the rotation just a little bit. Because while it's great to have 12 players that you feel like deserve minutes, you're going to be in a situation at times where someone either is upset that they're not playing enough, or you lose a close game like you did last night, and then everybody is upset and yelling at the coach or saying, why didn't you play so-and-so when you played so-and-so instead? But listening to Steve Kerr explain it, I mean, you wanted Pajemski for his ball handling and his playmaking, try to take a little bit of pressure off of Steph, and you want GP2 for defense. Obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Would it have been made a difference if Moses Moody was out there? Maybe. But I mean, these are the problems that you're inviting when you have a roster that calls for maybe 12 guys deserving of minutes every single night. It's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem.
Yeah, and I think in an ideal world, what this lets you do is it lets you take a little bit off Steph and Draymond, get to the trade deadline, sort of that area where you haven't used them as much as you possibly can.
Right.
You know, I think they played both of them less than 30 minutes last night. And because of that deep rotation, you can take some of the onus off of them. Where it gets a little scary is if this sort of thing continues and you don't have answers in the closing minutes when you need to have them because you're not quite sure what your best lineup is, because it's like, well, what if we try this? It's like, okay, that didn't work. What if we try this? Okay, that didn't work. And right. You don't quite know what to stick with. So that's where it can get problematic. I think the hope is that you see enough from these guys that you can leverage them, put two of them or three of them or mix them with the, you know, some draft picks and put them in a package and get somebody back where you say, okay, this is the clear thing that we're missing. Here's where we can get better and still have a deep rotation, but not, you know, 12 guys.
And that's why he's doing it that way. That's why you're letting all these guys play. You're talking about a 12-man bench, a rotation where everyone's getting in and playing, because like you're saying, you later on, a trade deadline comes up. Now you have a guys that's been leveraged that people can say, I saw those players play, and they played critical minutes, and they helped win, and Steve Kerr's know who they are because he's going to have them for all this time. And now you do have some more trade value because, like you're saying, you do need some guys that you know that's been seasoned in this league, that you're going to get in the playoffs, that they're going to have those minutes, those post-game minutes that you're going to be able to say, okay, these are those guys that's been in this situation postseason, that they've been there, that they're not going to blink. And that's what you have right now. The last couple of nights, you had a team that, teams that thought they were going to walk out there and win, supposed to win these last couple games. But what happened? It wasn't that the moment got too big. It's mental. The mental game of it. Guys not playing with the pace that Steve wants. Guys aren't doing the right thing because of the fact they're saying, okay, we're going to win. And when you're a pro, you understand the kind of moments that you're in, because like you said, anyone is good enough to win. Any team, these guys are getting paid. Every guy in the league is getting paid because they deserve to be here. It's the cream of the crop, and that's why you want to make sure you get some veteran guys on this team, hopefully build a trade deadline that's going to give you that extra, you know, spunk to get to where you need to get.
Yeah, and I think one area that frustrated Warrior fans last night specifically was the question that you asked about, Jake, which was Moses Moody, who maybe had his best half as a pro, 15 points in the first half, played basically the same amount of minutes, like a minute and a half or so less in the second half, but only put up one field goal attempt. And this has been kind of the story of Moses Moody's career. He kind of gets this run that at times maybe isn't equal to his productivity on the court. And he was asked post-game last night about inconsistent minutes. Here's what he had to say.
How important is like rhythm to be able to sustain, you know, how you're feeling out there for you?
That's not a luxury I've had through my career, so I've kind of had to figure out how to play whenever, whatever happens, whatever the opportunity is. So I kind of just deal with whatever it is. So I don't necessarily look for outside things, as in my playing time, rotation, whatever it is. Just when I get the opportunity, I take the shots that I get, I take the driving lanes that I get, and just play.
Not an easy thing to do, and I'm sure, Lo, you can speak to it, or at least you have teammates, former teammates and colleagues that can speak to it. I mean, you played a lot, and it's not like you were a reserve a lot in your NFL career, but go off the bench cold in the middle of a basketball or a football game or any game, that's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's really not, and that's where you got to be a pro, and that's where you got to be the ultimate pro, because opportunity, we talked about it the other day, opportunity is never lost, it's given to someone else. And so when you're called upon, you got to be able to rise to the moment, and you're talking about the first half 15 and the second half, you only get one or two shots up. You got to sometimes go grab those minutes and say, okay, when I'm getting in, I'm going to stay in the same flow, get the same rhythm, even though that I've been kind of, you know, I didn't have a couple minutes, so I've been out for this game. How do you go back in there and be a self-starter? That's mental. That is mental. A lot of this stuff, it comes down to the mental attitude of these players, and that's what you got to be. You got to be able to say, look, if you want to become that next player that's going to be a guy that's going to get a substantial amount of minutes and never and always mm-hmm. going to be able to stay in a rhythm, then you got to make those particular plays. That's how the Mike Turners and the Darren Sproles, when you had the greatest running back of his era, probably LaDainian Tomlinson, and how did Mike Turner still go to Atlanta and get paid? How did Darren Sproles go to Philadelphia and still get paid?
Awesome
because
career,
they
yeah.
looked at the opportunity when LT went out. They said, I have to capitalize on that. And that's no difference. And that's what these young guys have to understand. Look, my career has been this way. But look, when I come in for these last couple minutes, even though I might have not, I've been cold, I haven't had the opportunity, I got to seize those opportunities. And I think it's mental.
Yeah, I think it's a tough situation. Luckily for Moses, they gave him a nice contract to say,
yeah.
hey, we're still going to put you in uncomfortable situations and, and throw you in cold, and when you're hot,
here's a bunch of money. Deal with it.
Right, yeah. And he goes, okay, well, the money does help. I do think he's a very mature person. He's always been like that. He's always been way wiser than his years. And I do think as the season goes, he is going to be a staple of this team. He's not going anywhere. He has the right size. He rebounds so well. I think if he can stay confident in his shooting stroke, that's going to only get him more and more minutes. I just think he's a really solid basketball player, and he brings some physicality that is really valuable for the Warriors from his spot. And I do think in situations going forward, I could see them going to him a little bit more. But again, that's probably what a lot of Warriors fans want to see. And when it doesn't work out, we'll see if they admit that.
Yeah, and to what you were talking about, Lo, like when you get the opportunity, you got to go out there and earn it. I think a lot of Warrior fans would say, well, last night in the first half, he earned it.
Right.
Maybe he earned the right to close. But it's not always that simple. But 15 points in the first half, I mean,
ballin'.
He helped
ballin'.
Build the lead.
Yeah, you would also say that about Cam Thomas for the Nets, who had 23 and then didn't play, I don't think, at all in the fourth quarter.
Did he get hurt? I don't remember. Cam Johnson went out with a minor injury.
Cam Johnson, I think, got hurt, and Cam Thomas had 23,
wow,
and then they
23.
Just sat him down. But everybody else was hot and rolling, and it worked out. So, I don't know. The NBA can be weird in that way.
Yeah, and that's what Kerr was talking about, just the fact that no lead's safe. He's like, you know, a 20-point lead now with the three-point line now has just changed the way the NBA is, because you're right. You used to have 20-point lead. It's over. Now it's like, shoot, you get four threes in a row and a couple, you're like right back in the ball game. So it is different. You got to defend the three-point line. And then when you come, you know, try to defend the three-point line, teams, especially if they got slashers now cutting to the board and getting easy buckets, you're chasing behind them, and boom, you foul them, go to the line, and one. So now you're like, okay, pick your poison. So it's tough. It's tough. It's tough.
I think the other thing that's really hurting the Warriors, and Steve Kerr talked about it, is they're trying to now figure out on the fly how to make up for missing D'Anthony Melton. D'Anthony Melton, I mean, very unfortunate, but even before the long-term injury, he was in and out of the rotation because of a minor injury, the back, which bothered him all of last year with Philadelphia. Play a few games. Missed a few games, came back and played a few games, and now is out for the season. But even in that limited amount of time that he was on the court, he proved himself very, very valuable, because he's the rare, rare guy on this roster that can shoot, that can dribble, that can play make, and can play perimeter defense. Like, the Warriors don't have a guy who does all those things. The closest, really, is Pajemski, but the problem is Pajemski hasn't been shooting this year and isn't quite. It's not a knock on him. It's because Melton is so good. Pajemski isn't as good of a perimeter defender as Melton either. And now you're relying on Pajemski to be that guy and be the number two point guard behind Stephen Curry, and be the guy that takes some pressure off of Steph, but he has to play all of the non-Steph minutes, which means Pajemski's on the court when the Warriors' best player is on the bench, and invariably that's going to make it so much more difficult on him as well, because suddenly he can't play next to Steph, he's got to play behind Steph, and it's just a domino effect of everything that happens as a result of one player missing because of an injury, and now you're looking at a point where Steve Kerr, every you know, media availability he does, he's asked about Pajemski's struggles, and he's just this second-year guy who was playing basketball at Santa Clara 2 years ago. Like, that is what the Warriors are trying to solve on the fly, and it would be obviously easy if Pajemski was hitting 50% of his threes and was playing out of his mind, but when you go through a little bit of a struggle, when you're now being relied upon to be the guy after your veteran piece that you plucked out of free agency is suddenly gone, it's not an easy thing to do.
No question, and Pajemski, you can tell. He's pressing,
yeah.
You know, and this is also after he's dealt with injuries. It seems like he gets smacked in the face every single game. It's something where he's a young guy, and as much as they've talked about, is it the media pressure? Is it internal? Is there a lot on him? There's a lot asked of him. I think he probably puts way too much on himself and probably not feeling 100% like himself as part of that. I'm telling you, though, I still see when he's on the court, he's a really smart basketball player. And I know he's not shooting how he should. And I know he's not playing how you want him to play, and you're asking a lot. But he is a positive basketball player for the most part. And people saying, you know, get rid of him. They're just sick of him. I get it because Kerr turns to him a lot. And when he's not shooting the ball well, it looks ugly. But I do think he is just a really smart basketball player. And that gets a little underrated when he's struggling in other areas.
Should he be more of a facilitator when he's struggling shooting the ball? But you guys, he's a guy you feel can take over a game if he's hot? Or is it a guy, you know, that compliments Steph when, you know, I know he's a number
three. He's more of a distributor than a shooter, for sure. But he can make the shot. He made the three at a decent clip last year. He's just really struggling shooting the ball, and it's something Draymond spent like 3 minutes talking about a single answer last week, and he basically not blamed, but said a lot of what Pajemski is going through is on us, the media,
right,
and how we talk about Pajemski and how we're heaping all this pressure onto him because he had such a good rookie season. And Pajemski, who holds himself in such high regard and thinks so much of himself, and as he should, and is so confident in himself, he misses a few shots, and then he gets in his head. It's natural, right? We're all humans.
No question.
We make a mistake, and then you start thinking about it, and then at that point, it's too late.
Look at the Texans, some of the quarterbacks, the sophomore-itis. You see it hit. You see, you know, they had so much success early, and all of a sudden, the second year, they just expected to go out there and just carry teams to Super Bowl or carry a team. And here's that nothing was expected out of him last year, and he was just playing free and carefree and shooting it up and hitting the three. Now, all of a sudden, look, you're expected to go in here and hold it down while Steph's on the bench. You're expected to go in here and lead this team and be the facilitator, be the scorer. And now you're in that moment. And that sometimes gets tough for a lot of young guys.
Yeah, and it's hard. He's not the most. It's not like when Steph drives and gets to the paint, there's so much gravity there. There's not the same with Pajemski. So sometimes when he drives, he gets stuck in that middle ground. He's in these lineups where there's not as much movement around him, and guys aren't open. Or you'll have like a Kyle Anderson, guys that aren't real floor spacers. And there's some weirdness there that I think Kirk kind of quietly admitted they haven't figured it out. They haven't figured out all these lineups and what the best combinations are, but you're right. He's not reaching the level they want from him, and it's a problem.
I think the other part of this for the Warriors, and I was going to flatly ask Steve, if I told you preseason 17 games in, you're 12-5, how would you feel? And I would expect him to say, you know, pretty good. He kind of answered it himself in a different answer when he said, you know, we're 12-5, that's still a pretty good record. So I didn't feel the need to ask it, but this is kind of the natural cutting off point 17 games in, because the schedule turns, and now you got good team after good team after good team, which is what makes these last two losses so tough, because you had them. You were up 17, you were up 18 late in the third quarter in both, and you lose them both, including one of them at home after you had a day off ahead of that. But now you got Oklahoma City on Wednesday, maybe the best team in the Western Conference, maybe the second best team in the NBA behind the Celtics. You've got Phoenix on the road. Kevin Durant is back. They are very, very, very good when KD is playing. You go to Denver against Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets, who's back. Congrats to the Jokic's, and they welcomed a baby boy, and he's back and playing. You got the Rockets, who are off to a really good start this year. Couple of games against Minnesota, Memphis on the road, Minnesota again. Like, now the schedule really turns. And man, looking at 14-3 versus 12-5, I know it's just a couple of games. That's a pretty big difference when you consider that you might have some losses coming up based on schedule alone.
It's very 49ers of them. Right? Just taking a game you should win, and you go, all right, we'll figure it out later, but you had to do your work early. And again, this is a 12-5 team.
Yeah.
They've been incredible, but losing Melton, Steph, I'm very interested to see how the knee and all that stuff holds up over the course of this season. Getting Kuminga back will be big, but we'll see. They are going to be really tested before this play-in tournament, and if they end up doing well in the play-in tournament, that, you know, that's going to be taxing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they have success early. Yeah, they know we dropped these two games. They should have won. We talk about that. One came off, you know, four-game road trip, so you can understand one of those losses. Last night, you said, God, that just shouldn't happen. You get it. But they got hot. Like Kerr said, he alluded to, he said, man, they made, what, 20-some threes? That just doesn't happen usually. So when you get a hot team, even though they're a bad team, they got hot. But I think what's going to do the Warriors some good is because you had success early, because you've been winning, so you're used to winning ball games. So it's like, how are you going to go out here? Because you're like you just talked about the gauntlet they're getting ready to go on. This is a great test for this team, because if you can come out of that and split and win half these games and because you're playing some really good teams, it's going to do you a lot of good for your confidence to know that you really do belong in the teams you're playing.
Yeah, Oklahoma City's coming up tomorrow. That game's at 7 o'clock. Coverage begins at 6 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. OKC, of course, without Chet Holmgren. He got hurt when the Warriors were playing Oklahoma City in Oklahoma City in early November. Landed on his hip. It was a really gnarly fall, and he's going to be out for an extended period of time. So that OKC matchup, a little bit easier. But the Warriors certainly have that ahead of them. Something else that was interesting, talking to Steve Kerr earlier, and if you missed it, you download the free Odyssey app, use the Rewind feature. It's also available wherever you find your podcasts. Great conversation, as always, with Coach Kerr. It's always interesting when you have an athlete in one sport ask an athlete or a coach in a different sport questions, and the relationship that
the correlation
you have, like, right. You have truths that fit across all sport. I know you were talking about this earlier, thinking about how the Niners have failed in fourth quarters, second halves, and how the Warriors the last two games have done that. It just goes down to simple. I mean, Steve Kerr could have been a football coach answering that question. Execution. It's just a small thing here and there, and that cost us the win. Like, it's the same across every single sport.
Isn't it amazing, though, when you hear that answer, like, ah, yeah, he's right. And it is. And it's like you watch basketball teams, you watch the Warriors, you see them like, okay, guys are just pulling off on a shot. It's like, okay, they're not cutting. And that's what he talked about. You still, when you're winning a game, you still have to play hard with the same intensity. You can't say, okay, I'm winning. I'm not going to make that cut. I'm not cutting back door hard. I'm going to go like I'm losing that game. Yeah. I'm still cutting with the same type of energy. And that's what he was alluding to say, hey, look, even when you're winning and you're trying to burn clock or do whatever, last shot, you want to make sure that you're still playing with that energy.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Kerr admitted, he's like, we look kind of tired. You have a young Nets team with some guys that I'm sure most people wouldn't be able to name that are just playing like they have nothing to lose. And they do come up against those young teams, and those young teams are like, I don't care if you know who we are, we're just going to keep firing, and we're going to stay with it. And you might think you've won this thing in the third quarter, and you might take your foot off the gas, or what I think the Warriors did, where they tried to end it early in the third quarter, and their shot selection got a lot worse. That's a habit for them, and then you get a loose with the ball, you turn it over, these teams that are young and still have energy, and they take advantage of it, they run the other way, and all of a sudden, 18-point lead has evaporated, and you're going, oh, well, I don't know if we have the juice for this.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that maybe is a correlation or a carryover from one sport to the next, there's no doubt that I know it's been a while since the Warriors have been like that team in the NBA, but you get, other teams, you see Steph Curry on the other side, you get up for that basketball game, right? You try to give them your best shot, and the Niners, they haven't won a Super Bowl, but they've been the dominant team in the NFC for a while now, and you get the Packers on the other sideline. You think they don't have a little extra juice going against the Niners? They, of course, they do. Lost to them in the playoffs last year. I think I need two hands to count like the losses to the playoffs that the Packers have had to the Niners in the last like 15 years. Like, it's happened a lot. That's another similarity where you're a team that's trying to stay at the top. It's that much more challenging because you're getting every other team's best shot every single time you go out there and lace them up.
And one thing I haven't even mentioned with the Niners is the fact that when you are the number one team and you win your division and you have a great record, you get a brutal schedule.
Right.
That's one thing where if they lose out, that's great for them. They get a much easier schedule next year. Wow. That's just how they structure it.
That's why every year there's some team that goes worst in their division to winning the division. It happens every single year.
Yeah, that's why the NFL does it. It's for parity, and you know, if the Niners can take advantage of that, that would be great for them. But, you know, they'll probably try and win some games and finish 8-9. And
they will. They're going to try to win games. That's just who they are, and that's just the way they're built, and that's the guys on that team. But I just don't know if it'll happen because the way that they're just playing. We talked about it earlier. But, and you look at basketball, it's no different than football. And you got a guy like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan got everyone's best every single night.
Oh, yeah.
Because who he is and who is a player. The Warriors, people couldn't wait to knock these guys off. You heard there's a dynasty. People were talking about the Warriors. They went back-to-back. All the things that they've been through. And now you have a setback. Teams still say, that's Steph Curry. I'm walking out on the court. Steph Curry is going to get team's best every single night is because you want to take down Steph Curry because he's prolific. He's the best three-point shooter the game has ever seen, and he's going to go down, of course, you know, as a legend.
Yeah, 36 years old and still carrying the Golden State Warriors to the best of his ability. He is he's amazing. All right, time for a quick break here on Willard and Dibs. No Willard and Dibs this Thanksgiving week. It's Mark Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson. We got one more segment to get to before we get on out of here for the night. That's coming up on the other side. Valvoline Instant Oil Change is your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Visit their expert technicians to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and more. Safe holiday travel starts at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. Again, that's BayAreaOilChange.com. More Willard and Dibs with Grandy, Lowe, and Hutch coming up next.
Willard and Dibs.
Sorry about my dog. Hey, cut it out.
I don't know if we've met your dog yet, Steve.
Sounds like she's a stretch four. It's got some size to her in that bark.
More of a backup point guard.
On 95.7 The Game.
That was Steve Kerr, and we just had him on about 47 minutes ago. If you missed it, you want to hear it again, I suggest you do. Steve Kerr Greta, as always, is available for you on the free Odyssey app. You can use the rewind feature. You can search for Willard and Dibs. It'll be there in the podcast feed. It's also available wherever you get your podcasts. Also on YouTube, youtube.com/957TheGame. Steve Kerr, along with all of our other guests, Mark Schlereth and Greg Cosell today. They appear on 95.7 The Game on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? All right, Schlereth, Cosell, Kerr, best interview of the day. What do you think, guys?
I really enjoyed talking to Greg Cosell just because every question you ask...
You just football nerd out over there.
You're just like, all right, am I saying this like an idiot? Am I doing this right? And am I going to get embarrassed?
I got embarrassed for the three of us. I got it out of the way quick. I got it out of the way immediately.
I'm Slareth. I mean, that's Snake's my guy. So, I mean...
He was pretty good.
He was funny.
He'll tell it like it is.
He'll tell it like it is, too. But both the guys were great, and Kerr was amazing, too.
Yeah, it was awesome. Steve, I do appreciate that, you know, he's been in this for a while and he hasn't gotten totally jaded, and he does take time to be honest and answer when, you know, things aren't quite going right and take a little bit of ownership. And I know people get frustrated with him and, you know, think he's a little stubborn with certain things, but I think all coaches are. That's just the nature of the beast. But it was nice to talk to him.
Yeah. One of the maybe more interesting things that any of them said to us was Greg Cosell. So much of the time that we spent talking today has been about Kyle Shanahan and if there needs to be an evolution or a philosophy change. And I don't even think this was a question that we necessarily asked Cosell straight up, but he got into it and he essentially explained why the Niners tend to be reluctant to change things up. Shanahan's reluctant to change things up. Here's what Greg Cosell said about that.
You know how it is. When a team's been really good, and sometimes I think people forget how good the Niners have been. See, they haven't won a Super Bowl, so there are probably some people who think, oh, they're not good. But, I mean, they've been really good for a number of years. I would imagine, well, I know this for a fact because I've talked to coaches, not their coaches, I mean coaches over the years in my job, it's very difficult to decide to change something that has been really effective for a long time. Mm. I know fans think that's easy. Oh, just change. It's not working today. But, you know, that's a hard thing to do because you've been really successful doing it.
Makes sense. I mean, it's worked for years, and I mean, it's been the backbone of Shanahan's success with the 49ers. I'm not sure anyone's really expecting maybe like a change overnight, but it does feel like maybe the league is catching up a little bit and it might be time to tweak things a little bit.
No question. I think there's a couple areas you could point to. The wide nine is what I was, I think I asked Greg about there is like, does this work against the run, especially when you don't have the guys to hold up and hold up against double teams and be gap sound? That's something that it's pretty susceptible and teams are taking advantage of their aggression and they have for years, but usually they've had enough there to hold up. And then the other thing, I think, when Purdy is in, you don't even really get into a lot of offensive scheme with Brandon Allen because it was such a joke of a game. But the other thing is when Purdy is forced to throw hot, and it is a third down situation, it's more than third and long, do you give Purdy the opportunity to maybe change the protection? Because there's so much involved that Kyle tends to not want to do that, and it's a lot to put on a quarterback's shoulders. But if you trust Brock, and you do believe he is your quarterback of the future and for the franchise, he would know where he wants the pressure to come from and whether things are worth adjusting. I think that's something they should consider in limited situations, especially on key third downs when Purdy's taking a lot of shots off his blind side.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that I thought that you got from the interview. One, Stink talked about, hey, look, when do you know it's over? In the locker room, talking about different guys not being able to be there with you. And when you don't have that, something is missing, not having your brothers there. And that's what he said that you listen to. Okay. And you start to see that you hear those things that's coming out of there. So that was interesting. And I think with Cosell, it was more the fact that, like you guys are just alluding to, when he's saying, hey, look, Purdy in certain situations, he's not having the time. Either he's not having the time or he's not trusting it. So he's getting rid of the ball. He's taking off and running too prematurely. He's getting out of the pocket. So he's taking away different reads. So he talked about that in the offense that, hey, what's happened to Purdy because of the fact either pressure, offensive line has let the pressure get him, or Purdy's not trusting and he's not holding on because he's not letting the system develop. But he also talked about the inconsistency in the run game, saying, hey, look, when this Diner team is running the ball, they're pretty prolific. When they can't run, that's what the scheme is about. He talked about another guy. I thought it was interesting. Debo, talking about this is not about Debo because the scheme doesn't mean that you have to have elite route runners. It's a scheme that if the scheme is working, it doesn't matter who you put in at quarterback, receiver, running back. Think about the guys that's been here over the last 5 to 6 years under Shanahan. Raheem Mostert, the Cheetah. You look at Wilson. These are just guys, and these weren't necessarily great running backs, but look at them in this type of system, how they flourish. Now you have arguably the best running back in the league in McCaffrey, and look at the system and guys that aren't able to create that new line of scrimmage. So when you're hearing the things that he said, it has to make Cal Shanahan says, I have to take a deep breath, John and I, and say, how do we continue to evolve this offense? Or how do we continue to say, are we going to say defensively, offensively, do we need to change? Or do we need to get the players that's going to fit the defense, especially because offensively, you look at the Miami Dolphins, you look at certain teams that are still using Cal Shanahan's offense. It's still having success.
Yeah, no question. Grandy, I know we're talking about the future here, but you haven't said that they're just one game out. Come on.
They're just one game out. Only one game out of the NFC West. I mean, the Seahawks are in first place.
Right.
6-5. You're 5-6.
Let's go, baby.
As KG would say, anything's possible.
Anything is possible. There, crazier things have happened than winning a division while only being a game out. Of course, you got to add a little bit of context. You are in last place. Just everybody is bunched up. And you are currently 1-3 in the division, and you have no tiebreakers against anybody. So it's a little bit more than just one game out, but it's still just one game out.
And you don't have a single game that is even remotely easy. I guess the Bears could be easy, but
they're such a weird team. They might come out and put 30 up on you. You never know.
No question. You don't know what they are. They don't know what they are. No. And the 49ers aren't quite sure what they are. So that one should get... I'm actually excited for that game. It should be really stupid. I can't wait.
Stupid games sometimes can be very fun games. But you talk about the run game. It's crazy because I think we all just assumed maybe even if there were, you know, underlying issues that McCaffrey returning would kind of solve a lot of them, and it clearly hasn't. How about this? In the first 8 games of the year, the Niners have averaged 159 rushing yards per game. That's a pretty good number. 3 games with McCaffrey, the last 3, 83 rushing yards per game. Makes no sense on the outside.
Huge fall off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the reigning offensive player of the year back, and your rushing average essentially is cut in half.
I would say, while it's not, you know, the offensive line is clearly the problem here, I will say McCaffrey did admit after that Seattle game that he hasn't quite felt like himself. And I do think he looked a little better in this last game, but that is a factor in it. And that's why people are clamoring for Jordan Mason. It's not for no reason. It's not like in years past where it was just like, hey, play the backup just because it's something different, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of that. We've seen Jordan Mason. We've seen him make something out of nothing. That said, I think they've just been crushed physically at the line of scrimmage, and even if they had run Mason, it still would have looked pretty bad.
Oh, especially because Green Bay. I think they would have beat Seattle, though. And here's the thing. I don't think I'm clamoring to say replace Christian McCaffrey, because McCaffrey is unbelievable. Let's not get it twisted. It's just saying compliment Christian McCaffrey.
Exactly.
Let Jordan Mason come in and be Jordan Mason. Let McCaffrey be McCaffrey. That's what we're saying. We're not saying, okay, oh, Christian McCaffrey's done. No, Christian McCaffrey is an elite, one of the best, or if not the best passing receiver and running back in the league.
Yeah.
But he just needs complimentary, and that's Jordan Mason to come in and run, though, get those hard yards and loosen up the defense. That's all we're saying. So I think you have to do that in order to have success.
Yeah, well said. All right, well, that's all we got time for
today, guys.
I know you guys will be back tomorrow with Dan Devone. I'm taking off. I'm going up to see family in Napa starting tomorrow, so I will be off the rest of the week. Dan Devone will be in with you guys tomorrow. Looking forward to listening on my drive up to Napa. Should be a lot of fun, but appreciate hanging out with you guys.
Oh,
the last
you're the
two
best,
days.
Man. We got to do it again, brother. It was a lot of fun.
Looking
appreciate
forward to
you,
it.
Randy. You've been incredible, man.
You too.
You're the driver, baby. You've been the driver.
Trying my best. For Lo Neal, for Jake Hutchinson, my name is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. And that is Warriors Roundtable, a full hour of Warriors talk with Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean. That is coming up next. Again, thanks so much for tuning in. Happy early Thanksgiving. We'll talk next time on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, it's Willard and Dibs for Safeway. Enjoy these amazing deals for their members, and as always, earn 4 times reward points on hundreds of exclusive offers with your Safeway app. Fresh Signature Farms turkey, 9 to 24 pounds for just 87 cents per pound. Limit one item. When I think turkey, I think Dan Dibley.
Yeah, and I'm known to gobble here and there, but you can also get an exclusive digital deal, Signature Select Classic Ham, shank, half, or whole, bone in, just 87 cents per pound. Limit one item.
I'm not big on you using the word shank. Makes me uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, that's the golf course, and I'm also known to be a bit of a ham. But one other thing about me, I'm cute, and you can get exclusive digital deals on cuties, mandarins, 3-pound bag, $2.77 each. Limit one item.
That was much nicer. I like that. Okay, these and other great digital deals are available in the For You section on the Safeway app. The app is very simple to use, and it makes it easy to save money. Who doesn't want that? Go to Safeway.com for more details, and we'll see you in the aisles.
All right, folks. This is it. The weekend many of you have been waiting for. Black Friday. The lowest prices of the year on the top-rated brands of TV. Samsung, LG, and Sony, with deals up to $1,000 off. No need to buy a poorly rated unknown brand with prices like this. So what could be even better? How about Video Only's Better Than Black Friday deals? That's right, Better Than Black Friday. Before you buy, check out Video Only. Or you'll be sorry.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hi, I'm Dr. Peter Stahl, board-certified urologist and senior vice president of men's sexual health at HIMSS. In my 12 years of practice as a reproductive urologist, I've helped many guys with ED, and it has never been more convenient to treat than it is right now, thanks to HIMSS. It really wasn't easy before. You had to take time out of your day, come to a physical office, and see a specialist like me in person. Now, through HIMSS.com, you can get world-class sexual health care and a full range of treatment options for ED through a 100% online process. It starts with a free assessment from a medical provider licensed in your state who can determine if ED treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is shipped to you for free. So don't wait. Join the hundreds of thousands of guys who've gotten help for their ED through Hims.
To start your free online visit and find ED treatment at up to 95% off brand name prices, go to hims.com/joy. That's hims.com/joy for your free online visit.
There are Black Friday deals, and then there are Kohl's Black Friday deals. Where else can you get 40% off Levi's, up to 50% off Sephora fragrances, and Whole Foods?